Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Ordinary Angels by Sharon Stevens Evans. Narrated by George W. Saris and Lisa S. Ware. A Note About Privacy. Many of the names in this story have been changed to protect the privacy of their family members. There are also many who contributed to this story or whose names have always been part of the public history, and the author extends her deep appreciation and acknowledgement for everyone's role in this amazing story. We have done our best to confirm facts, timeline, and details in Sharon's story as well as possible, though certainly those who were there have different perspectives and memories. We are glad to be able to bring Sharon's memories to you, as well as accounts from many others close to the story. And know you will be blessed. Prologue. Sharon Stevens, twice divorced, barely making enough to support herself, but never claimed to be an angel. In fact, her life was full of chaos and risk from the moment she was born. Early in life, perilous situations were thrust upon her. As an adult, she gravitated toward adventure and spur-of-the-moment decisions that often put her on the precipice of disaster and kept her in the pathway of people who would take advantage of her. If your aim is to find fault with her, she would be an easy target. But look again. This diminutive hairstylist was not the person you would have chosen for such a monumental task with a life hanging in the balance. But God chose her nonetheless. And where you or I would probably have done whatever was the very least we could do, Sharon said yes to the impossible. She might never have risked everything she had to help a complete stranger, but for the events that unfolded that unusually cool Kentucky August morning.
1. The Article, August 13th, 1992. At some time or another, we all wonder what our destiny in life will be. Will our legacy be something we carefully strive to make happen? Or does God have a mysterious plan for us to figure out? Something we are supposed to say yes to? We wonder, when we die, what will we be most remembered for? When that day came for me, the day I figured out what I was supposed to say yes to, I could never have imagined all of the ways I had been preparing for this assignment all of my life. Every person who hurt me, every person who helped me in some way, who stepped in as my very own angel, had a part in it. God didn't waste any of it. Not a single tear. And through all those things I experienced during my life, both acts of violence and of kindness, through God's constant protection over me, I had my moment to become an angel to someone else. And in turn, that sweet child became an angel to me and so many others. I had no idea that beautiful summer morning in August of 1992. As I woke up and got ready to start my fast-paced day as a hairstylist, that my calling was about to tap me on the shoulder. As I sat down at my kitchen table, drinking my first cup of coffee, I read through the Courier Journal's morning edition. It was then that I came upon the most heartbreaking article I had ever read.
Louisville family is bearing up under crushing burden of crises, the story title read.
My eyes were drawn to the adorable faces of two small girls sitting on the lap of a beautiful young woman. Jim Adams, the columnist, often wrote human interest stories about people or events in the community. But this story was different. There was an urgency about it. I started to read.
Basically, Ed Schmidt looked okay, considering. Yes, there were dark circles under the eyes, several days' growth of beard, a weariness in his shoulders, hair rebelling. But his constitution was firm, and just about everyone who knows him says the same thing. I don't see how he holds up so well. The concept of a healthcare crisis isn't news to the Schmidt family of 243 Alpha Avenue in Buechel. Crisis has made itself a member of the family. Daughter Ashley, age 4, received a new liver last year at the University of Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha. And her only sibling, Fragile Michelle, 20 months and 16 pounds, is in need of a liver transplant, too. Both have biliary atresia.
I had never heard of biliary atresia, but I knew that a liver transplant was a difficult surgery for anyone, much less a sick little child. I knew that finding a match could take some time. I folded the newspaper to frame the article and kept reading.
Yet the most pressing Schmidt crisis today has to do with neither Ashley nor Michelle. This time, it's their mother, Ed's wife. Teresa A. Schmidt, 29, has been in the intensive care unit of Baptist Hospital East for more than a month. A machine is breathing for her, at what doctors call a high level of life support. It started with difficulty breathing, progressed like lightning into an overwhelming pneumonia, then to adult respiratory distress syndrome. As a complication, doctors also suspect an uncommon vascular disorder called Wegener's granulomatosis. It's no exaggeration to say her life has been seriously threatened. So Ed Schmidt has been living with crisis. I looked at the photo again. Right at that moment, that beautiful young mother of two was fighting for her life in a hospital ICU unit with two critically ill children at home with her overwhelmed husband. My heart was stirring as I clutched the paper, my coffee growing cold. I read slowly, stopping and staring out the window, deep in thought. In the next paragraph, the readers heard from the young father. Since Ashley was born, I've worked 70, 60 hours a week and not done as much as I should have. But you've got to pay the bills, and you've got to buy their medicines. The first week Teresa was here in the hospital, she started going downhill. They made the decision to open her up and do a lung biopsy. She couldn't stand to be moved down to the operating room, so the next thing I knew, half the operating room was coming down the hall here, and they operated on Teresa back in the ICU. To summarize how everything began for this sweet little family, by 1992, Ed and Teresa Schmidt had been married 12 years, and like most young couples, expected to live happily ever after. But for them, tragedy after tragedy cruelly surfaced, interrupting their dreams of happiness from the beginning. From the outset, Ed and Teresa had planned to raise a family. They were both hard-working people, confronting the everyday tasks of building a home and future together. Teresa was a beautiful, intelligent, fun-loving 21-year-old when they married, respected at the county clerk's office. Ed had served his time in the Army, and after his release, he went to work in corrections. After 4 years, Teresa and Ed learned they were finally going to have a baby. The joy they felt was overwhelming as they prepared to welcome their little bundle of joy. Teresa gave birth to a beautiful baby girl, whom they named Ashley. Like most young couples, they hoped for their child to be in good health. They were amazed at this tiny little creature they had produced, and proudly enjoyed all the special moments of their precious child's birth, their spirits high. While in the hospital, Teresa began to notice that something wasn't quite right with her newborn daughter.
the doctors alerted the parents that their baby had a severe medical condition. She was born with a deadly liver disorder called biliary atresia. She would require a liver transplant to survive. Without a transplant, little Ashley would likely not live to her third birthday. From this day forward, their lives would never be the same. But Ed and Teresa would remain firm in their resolve to address the issues facing their tiny daughter. I paused and set the paper down, a tear rolling down my cheek. For most of us, such childhood diseases are a rarity. But I couldn't help but think of the births of my own healthy boys and imagine how devastating it would be to learn that one of them suffered from a life-threatening disease. As parents, we want to protect our children from every danger, particularly when they are so young and vulnerable. The truth is, we can't. Ed and Teresa couldn't, and neither could you nor I. I stared out the window as I thought about the Schmidts and about my own journey as a single parent, remembering one particularly frightening incident my oldest son Derek experienced as a young child. 2. A New Gear. Summer, 1967. After my separation from Derek's father, a story you will learn more about later, I settled back in Louisville near my parents. Needing to support myself and my son, I decided to use my experience gained on the road with my husband's band, where I dressed hair for a number of well-known celebrities, including David Crosby, the Byrds, Paul Revere and the Raiders, and many more. As I started my career as a hair designer, my parents would watch Derek during the day while I was at work. As with most boys, Derek was very rambunctious, even as a little 2-year-old. So, to keep him from getting into too much mischief, I bought him a kitten, and they became the best of friends. My father wouldn't allow the kitten in the house, so Derek played with him outside. One day, I drove over to pick Derek up and saw Mom, Dad, and the neighbors frantically scouring the bushes around the house and the property next door. I parked the car and strode up the walkway to the house. My father turned to me. The haunted look on his face said everything. "What's going on, Dad?" "Don't be alarmed, but Derek's gone missing."
"Missing? What do you mean by missing?"
Of course, I was immediately alarmed. He went on to tell me that Derek had learned to unlock the back door. "Today, when he woke up from his nap," my father explained, "he must have walked into the backyard." My mind was racing. I asked, "How long has he been gone?" "About an hour," he responded. "The police are on their way." My heart sank and I began to tremble. Like every mother, I feared the worst, imagining him being kidnapped or wandering off into the street behind the house and getting run over. Tears now pouring from my eyes as I struggled not to panic, I immediately joined the search, calling out and hoping that he was just hiding and that hearing his mommy's voice would draw him out. One of his favorite games was hide-and-seek, and given his small size, Derek always hid under things. I walked around to the backyard, stood there, and surveyed the lawn from the patio. That's when I spotted his inflatable swimming pool, which was flipped upside down. I saw some bouncing and bumping movement under it and felt instantly relieved. I quietly approached the pool and gently raised it. Derek's big blue eyes looked up at me. I was so glad to find him that I didn't know whether to scold my little toddler or hug him. He and his tiny kitten had been under the pool for over an hour on a warm day. He could have suffocated easily in that time or suffered from heat stroke. Miraculously, Both he and his sweet pet seemed unharmed. When Derek heard all the thrashing about and heard his grandparents and neighbors calling out for him, he must have thought they were all playing hide-and-seek, I thought to myself. I picked Derek up and held him tight, walking to the front of the house, Derek with his kitten in his arms, just as the police cars arrived. My eyes were swollen with tears as I handed Derek over to my mother's arms. I kept clutching the kitten as I explained where I found my son. My father took the kitten from me and said to the little animal, "Okay, you can stay in the house." Derek's eyes lit up, and he said, "Good, Papa, good." As I thought back to that day so long before, I remembered other moments when my own son had been in circumstances far more dangerous than this. I stood up from the table and stepped over to the coffee maker to pour myself another cup. I looked out into the backyard and could almost see that yellow plastic pool. For any parent, a situation like a lost child reminds us just how precious and fragile are the lives of our children and loved ones. But of course, that brief moment in my memory could not compare to the fear and powerlessness this father felt with the lives of both of his children, then his beloved wife, in jeopardy. My thoughts returned to the Schmidt family's tragic situation, and I sat down to continue reading the article. At some point during that week, one doctor told me she probably wouldn't make it through the day. Since then, this has been a daily vigil, along with various family members and a wide assortment of people touched by the family with triple crises. Many others, from the Southeast Area Ministries to the Fern Creek Business and Community Association to the Butchel Fern Creek JCs, have asked what they can do to help. Ed Schmidt simply wants to say thanks to everyone. What are the odds of me having two kids with the same disease and having my wife go down with some disease? Odds of that are tremendous, so I don't believe in odds. It's day to day. If Teresa does come through this, she's talking about a long period of rehabilitation. I mean a super long time of rehabilitation. I haven't thought about it, to be honest. I just live day to day. I know that somewhere down the road, the load's got to get lighter. I had endured hardships both as a child and a parent myself. It was as if this little family's trials were awakening all of those emotions all over again, tugging at my heart and reigniting the fears that used to haunt me. I questioned myself. I was in no position to help them, to make any real difference, was I? As I finished reading the article, a voice inside me grew stronger and stronger, telling me to help. Less than 20 years earlier, I was a young mother whose life was in the hands of a team of doctors. My family told I would likely not survive. Yet I did. Everything I learned that day so long ago, as I lay hovering between life and death, was coming back to me now, filling me with peace and courage. I decided in that moment to listen, to say yes, and to act. I had no idea what that commitment would mean, exactly what the needs were, how hard it would become, how long it would last, nor how many other people would become involved. I had no idea how deeply this decision would change my life. My heart found a new gear that morning. The article called forth a remarkable sense of purpose inside of me, focused on the duty to serve those sweet faces smiling at me from that newspaper article. I was quickly becoming more and more connected to this family and the terrible situation they faced. My alarm clock rang, set to alert me that I had 30 minutes to drive to the hair salon where I worked. Perfect timing, I thought. Learning about Michelle's diagnosis was too much for me to digest. I folded the newspaper and put it in my purse, turned off the coffee maker, and headed out the door. It was a cool morning, and as I drove to work, I couldn't help but feel overwhelmed by the task ahead of me. Yet I did not doubt that my life's mission was to help this family. I had no idea, as my mind began to brainstorm possible solutions, that my complicated past had uniquely prepared me for all that lay ahead. Throughout the day, as I worked styling my client's hair, I could not stop thinking about the Schmidt family. I wanted to learn everything I could. What had the last 4 years been like for this family? What did it mean to have biliary atresia? And how risky was it for the Schmidts to have Michelle after seeing their firstborn, Ashley, go through so much? In time, I would learn as much as I could about the condition and about all the family was going through. 3. Ashley's Day, March 1991. In 1991, biliary atresia affected roughly 1 out of every 15,000 births in the United States. Scientists still do not know the cause. The nature of this deadly disease would eventually trigger a series of painful side effects. Little Ashley's jaundiced skin would constantly itch, causing her to scratch herself, even in her sleep, leaving scabs and open sores. In addition, her tiny, enlarged liver put uncomfortable pressure on other organs, a condition which often leads to other organ malfunctions and severe damage. The only cure was a liver transplant, but even with a transplant, she would have a lifetime of issues to face. Her body would not absorb food well, causing vitamin deficiencies and weakening the child's immune system. As a result, Ashley would become even more vulnerable and frail, falling victim to disease and viruses. The required medications were very harsh on her delicate tissues. As this disease progressed, spontaneous internal bleeding became a constant threat that could instantly kill the child. The road ahead for the Schmidt family was going to be long and hard, but like any parents, Ed and Teresa were determined to pursue options that would heal their daughter, or at least improve her quality of life, even though they were not wealthy by any means. Caring for Ashley was such a joy for this loving couple. Ed and his ailing daughter became great buddies, and Teresa enjoyed watching their gentle play on the blanket spread over the living room rug. Teresa had always wanted a couple of children, raised to be close and supportive of each other through the years. Teresa's parents had died when she was relatively young. She knew the loneliness of a solitary existence until she met Ed. While it would be difficult having another child to raise with Ashley needing so much extra care, Teresa felt that having a healthy sibling by her side might give Ashley the motivation to persist and get stronger. While they waited for news of a liver donor, the young couple had lots of questions for Ashley's specialist. Would another pregnancy be safe? Was Ashley suffering because of something in their genes that could be passed on to another child? He assured them that Ashley's condition was not hereditary and highly unlikely to reoccur. They were relieved to hear this news and made plans for a second child. Teresa soon found herself happily expecting another baby. The two continued giving Ashley the consistent, special care she needed while Teresa's baby bump grew. The next few months flew by, and on December 3rd, 1990, Michelle Lee Schmidt was born. Teresa's fears rose as she held Michelle for the first time, remembering Ashley's complications. None of baby Michelle's tests revealed any issues, but Teresa's feelings of uneasiness remained as she brought Michelle home, carefully examining her baby very closely day after day, looking for any signs of a problem. Ashley was 2 and a half, and while she doted over her beautiful newborn baby sister, the family nervously awaited the call that the doctors had a liver match for Ashley. Christmas came and went, and as the days ticked by, their daughter's condition worsened. Ed and Teresa feared it would soon be too late for little Ashley. Then, early in 1991, the call came. While Teresa rapidly packed their bags, Ed became frantic, having second thoughts about such an intricate operation. Teresa stopped packing and went over to sit down beside him on the bed. "Let's talk about this," she said softly. With tears running down his face, Ed's fears came tumbling out. "I can't let her go. She's so weak and sick. She may not survive the surgery. I just can't put her through it." Teresa placed a hand gently on his face, pulling him near her. "I'm afraid too, but she's suffering, and it's only going to get worse. This surgery is our one chance for her to have a long life, free of her constant pain."
"Teresa, I'm so scared of losing her," he cried out.
"I know, but we must forget our fears and trust God to provide for her needs. We can't think of ourselves," she said, looking directly into Ed's eyes. "Let's give Ashley that one chance."
Teresa's plea reached the panic-stricken father, and they quickly finished preparing for the trip. By now, they only had 6 hours to cross the country from Louisville to the hospital in Omaha, Nebraska, for the harvested liver to be transplanted. A charter flight was reserved and ready to take off, but would not leave until a $5,200 payment was made. Ed's parents had agreed to use their savings to bankroll the flight, but there was a hold on the funds at the bank. Time was running out. When the check finally cleared, they boarded their plane and were soon airborne and on their way to Omaha. A hospital ambulance was waiting at the other end to quickly take Ashley to the hospital. Ashley came through the 9-hour surgery successfully. She would have to live on costly medication for the rest of her life, but she was alive and would soon be a healthy, rosy-cheeked little girl. During the first few weeks of Ashley's recuperation in Omaha, Teresa enjoyed caring for newborn Michelle at Ashley's bedside, now sure that the worst was over for Ashley. After months in Omaha, Ed was glad to finally bring his family home again, relieved that the whole ordeal was over. Life seemed to be slowly but surely heading back in the right direction. The young couple had massive bills to contend with, but after watching their child's brush with death, they would find a way to work through it, and time was now on their side. Ashley required intense home care at this stage. She would be attached to medical filtration tubes for some time. Restricting the movements of a 3-year-old child who felt good for the first time in her life was quite a task for the young mother, but she found a way and had help from Ed's mother when she needed to rest. Not long after Ashley's liver transplant, Teresa began to feel ill. She had a long-lasting cold she couldn't shake, but her doctor told her it was nothing serious. As days turned into weeks, and Teresa immersed herself in the routine of caring for both her girls while Ed worked as many hours as he could to cover the bills, Teresa set aside concerns about herself as her keen motherly instincts continued to tell her something's not right with Michelle. Weeks passed, and Teresa's own symptoms continued to hang on. By the time Michelle was 3 months old, Teresa's instincts about her infant would prove once again to be right. Michelle was not gaining weight, and other symptoms began to appear. Against all odds,
Michelle was also diagnosed with biliary atresia, the same life-threatening condition that afflicted Ashley. Once again,
sample complete. Ready to continue?